coming to you from sunny Los Angeles, California. This is 30 Minute Mentors. Leaders to listen to with Adam Mendler. Here is your host, Adam Mendler.
Our guest today has been a Hollywood icon for more than three decades. In the 1980s, he was a member of the Brat Pack. In the 90s and 2000s, he appeared on many of our favorite TV shows and movies and starred on one of my favorites as Sam Seaborn on The West Wing. Many of our listeners may know him best from his work last decade in Parks and Rec. What listeners may not know is that Rob Lowe is a two-time New York Times bestselling author and an entrepreneur. Rob, thank you for joining us.
Hey, great to be with you.
As someone who speaks and writes a lot about leadership, I find the character you play in your newest show, 911 Lone Star, especially interesting. He's a strong and tough leader, but relatable through his vulnerabilities. What do you hope viewers watching the show will learn about leadership by watching your character, Owen Strand?
I think that for me, the more that you can fold in your humanity into your leadership, the stronger you are as a leader. Your human frailties, when treated the right way, can actually enhance your leadership capabilities because it makes you relatable, it makes you a human being, it makes you not just the boss. You know, we all have struggles. Some of us mask them better than others. And, you know, bringing those conversations into the workplace can really help team build.
In your experience, what are the defining qualities of an effective leader?
Inspiration, somebody who inspires me. And people overcoming adversity is probably the single biggest source of inspiration. You know, whether it's working for a director or a business partner or a fellow co-star or a book editor, all of the people that I've ever worked with who, you know, I want to be inspired by them. I want them to own their leadership. I like to walk into a situation and be able to scan the room and go, oh, there's the leader. The way you carry yourself, it's a charisma thing, it's a confidence thing. It doesn't have to be noisy. In fact, some of the most successful men that I know who are worth the most amount of money are the most humble, unassuming guys in the world, but they have that aura and that energy of confidence, and that's what you want to do. You want to be working with someone who you are going to trust them to lead you out of the foxhole into battle.
In your view, has effective leadership in Hollywood and in general changed over the years? And what are your thoughts on the topic?
I mean, I continue to be inspired by the same things that always inspired me. Point of view is a big thing. You know, I think that decision by committee is not part of leadership. It certainly isn't creatively. And if somebody has a strong point of view, that gives me confidence. If I get the sense that somebody doesn't have a strong point of view, it makes me nervous, and it's kind of like seasickness on a boat. When one person gets it, it easily infects everybody else.
Sure.
So, you know, and that's been the same for me, you know, since I effectively started, you know, acting at the highest levels in 1979, and it remains true today. People want to feel safe. They want to feel like they're with somebody who knows what they're doing. And I've worked with first-time directors who have no experience, but they know what they're doing and you feel really, really comfortable. I've worked with directors with tons of experience and I get the sense that they're a little wobbly and you don't feel safe. People need to feel protected and safe to do their best work.
What have been your favorite roles over the years and why?
Oh, wow. I mean, one of the good things about being around and hanging around as long as I have is, you know, you get to have a bunch of different roles that you love and relate to. I mean, you know, it's certainly Sam Seaborn in The West Wing. It's Chris Traeger in Parks and Recreation. It's my crazy, you know, facelift character in Steven Soderbergh's Behind the Candelabra. You know, I love this new character, frankly, Owen Strand. You know, it's a real Ryan, you know, Ryan Murphy created the show. Ryan Murphy has created every piece of interesting television in the past, you know, decade, whether it's Nip Tuck, Glee, American Horror Story. Ryan has a way of making things really original and fresh. And, you know, the firefighting genre has been around forever. There's not much fresh about it. People love it historically, and that's great. Just take something that has historically been great and people love and make it interesting and new and fresh is a real trick. And Ryan's done it with this character. It's very unexpected and fun to play.
Can you describe your daily routine when you're preparing for a role? And what about when you're shooting and when you're in between projects?
Well, when I'm looking at a script to do it, you know, the first thing I think about is, you know, the part, what I'm actually going to be doing. You know, is it a part that I feel like I can score in? Is it the part that's going to be memorable? You know, I mentioned Behind the Candelabra a minute ago. I had four scenes in it. Stars Michael Douglas and Matt Damon. Those four scenes I did had more impact than starring in 100 scenes in another movie. So it's not, it truly is not the size of the part. And then it's who you're going to be working with, who your teammates are. And then the actual sort of prep very much depends on the part. You know, on 911 Lone Star, I'd had a lot of interaction with first responders, with all of the disasters that befell Southern California. The fires and the floods all happened in my neighborhood. I had seven different companies camping in my yard. I was cooking for them and got to know the men and women really well. So I already understood what makes them tick. And that's half the battle, is you got to know what makes your character tick, what they would do and say in any given situation, not just what's written. And, you know, then you go on the set and you try to be free and you try to be loose and you try to be full with your technique, knowing your lines and knowing where the camera is. But then you want to also be kind of empty so inspiration can fill you up.
Can you talk about your early days in the business, your time working with your friends from high school and what that experience was like?
Well, I kind of think that there are times and places where, I don't know if it's the zeitgeist or the something in the water, but, you know, whether it's, you know, Laurel Canyon in 1968, and you've got, you know, the Byrds and Crosby, Stills and Nash and Neil Young and Joni Mitchell, and, you know, they're all kind of there doing their thing, or whether it's Malibu, Santa Monica in the mid 70s, where you had me and Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez and Sean Penn and Chris Penn and Robert Downey Jr. You know, we were just all kind of, you know, in that place and wanting to do the same thing. Some of us earlier, you know, than others. You know, I arrived there wanting to be an actor when I moved from Ohio. You know, we'd make backyard movies together. I do a one-man show based on, inspired by my books. And in it, I show one of those crazy 8th grade, you know, super 8mm, you know, movies that we made in Martin Sheen's backyard. And it's, people get a lot of laughs and it's really fun. But you know, from the earliest time I can remember, I always wanted to be an actor. And it just so happens that a lot of my friends felt the same way. And we've all kind of managed to, you know, carve out careers.
Like most people, you've been through a lot of highs and lows, but because you're a public figure, your highs seem a lot higher and your lows seem a lot lower.
Exactly. Yeah, I like that.
Can you share with listeners how you were able to overcome your toughest setbacks? I think that it's a topic that no matter who I'm interviewing and no matter who's listening, this is the area that I think is as relatable as any. And I would really love as candid insights as you can provide.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, and by the way, I'm no different than anybody else. Like, for example, I'm a huge Bruce Springsteen fan, and I feel like I know everything about Bruce. He's inspired me. I've seen his concerts forever. I know him a little bit. You know, his daughter went to school with my son at Duke. And then I went and saw his one-man show and read his book where he talks very candidly about his depression and overcoming his depression. And I thought, I didn't think I could be inspired any more by Bruce than I already have been. And yet, now I am. And so I get it. Anytime I looked at somebody who I'm a fan of and they're honest and comfortable in their own skin enough to peel back the curtain and show their humanity and their vulnerability, it's inspiring. And, you know, for me, you know, I'm a product of two divorces. I used to think they weren't that big a deal, that everybody gets divorced. And then I had my own kids and looked at them and thought, holy shit, can you imagine if I walked out of the house? So there's that. And, you know, then there was this weird thing where I really wanted to do what I wanted to do really early on. And that was not really accepted in, you know, before I came out here. So an 8-year-old growing up in Ohio wanting to be an actor was not looked at well. And people want to beat me up over it and I'd have to fight and all that. And then you come out here and then you get famous early and that's great. And then you get money and that's great, but nobody's ever told you how to use it, what to do with it. You don't even know how it happened. You're wondering if it's going to continue to happen, and it's all very confusing, and there's no one to teach you or help you, and you're making it up as you go along. And then it's at an age where everybody, no matter what they're going through, is trying to figure out what their relationship is with alcohol or drugs. And that's a very natural part of being 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. And, you know, I found a ton of solace in that. I loved the way I felt when I was getting loaded, loved it, as a lot of people do. And, you know, it's sort of like that story of like a frog is boiled to death incrementally. And, you know, if you turn up the water slowly, it never even knows it's in trouble. That's
sure.
sort of my story with, you know, drugs and alcohol. It was like, I never had a, you know, I never ran anybody over in a car. I never missed work, none of that stuff. But incrementally, it was really, really affecting me. And by the grace of God, when I was 26, I made the decision to get into recovery and thought my fun was over. Thought my life was over. No, I didn't do it. Didn't, you know, thought, okay, I'm old now. I'm 26. My life's over. I'm an old man now. And it's going to be boring and there's going to be no more fun, but I kind of got to do it. And, you know, that's what it was. And I was really lucky to own it. Ended up loving sobriety, loving being sober. And, you know, I will have 30 years sober in May, God willing.
Congratulations.
Thanks. So for me, it was, and then that put me on a journey of self-analysis. Because once you unlock that Pandora's box, there's more in it. And, I thought for me, the ism, alcoholism, you know, whether it's, you know, gambling, food, sex, money, the ism, the addict mentality behavior, it filters through all of those things, and you kind of get your handle on one of them, and then it's like whack-a-mole. It pops up somewhere else. Here's the bad news. The work never ends, but the good news is it's unbelievably satisfying, and you can't argue with the results. You know, today my life is happiest it's ever been. The work is better than it's ever been. I've managed to stay married to the same woman for 29 years. I have two grown sons who are amazing young men. And then I'm beyond blessed, but I know that I don't have any of it without that first step of the long journey of recovery.
Can you talk a little bit more about the work that you've put in and the work that you advise listeners to put in, regardless of the challenge that they're trying to overcome in their life? It could be addiction. It could be getting fired from a job. It could be going through a breakup. It could be disappointing news, you know, not getting the promotion that they wanted or not advancing as fast as they thought they would in their career. What do you do to overcome that setback? And in your personal case, you've been surrounded with some tremendous people. How do you build that support system? And who are the kinds of people that can really help you overcome challenges and get to the top?
We could do a 7-part series on that question. The thing that struck me though, as you were talking, is I can remember when I first got sober thinking, oh great, now I'm going to get those movie roles that have escaped me. Mm. Like now I'm getting my own house in order and now I'm going to get that Martin Scorsese movie. Like that was the ultimate like thing. Well, it's almost 30 years later. I never got the Martin Scorsese movie. But that's what I want. But what God, the universe, however you want to look at it, that plan was way better than my stupid little human petty plan. The universe's plan for me was beautiful kids, beautiful wife, long successful career, great health, financial stability. It was way beyond my wildest dreams. I literally was unable to comprehend it. I wanted a goddamn movie. So what I like to tell people is, you know, again, however you want to say it, the universe, God, whatever it is, wants you to be happy, joyous, and free. That's the plan. That's the plan. It's out there. Really, only you can fuck that up. So the minute you stop fucking all that stuff up, it, you know, those things are going to happen. It may not be what you want. In my case, it wasn't. turns out it was better. So, but again, none of it happens unless you're willing to do the work you need to do. And you know, the number one thing is self-honesty. It's like, you got to be able to take a long, hard look in the mirror and figure out what your part of it is. It's not that you got fired. It's not the world's against you or the system is rigged or any of those things. If you're thinking like that, you're done. You're doomed. You might as well not. You're done. It's what is your part in it. And, you know, you can't have secrets. You can't, like, you know, come pep cut. I'll tell this person that, but I'm not going to tell them that. It's like, you need to be an open book with at least somebody. And once you can live your authentic life and be who you truly are, then that opens the faucet for all of those things that, again, the powers be, God, spirituality, the universe, whatever, however you want to look at it, that can all now flow through the faucet. You can't do it when you're gumming up the works.
Experience Adam's insights and inspirational message by booking Adam to appear at your company, on your campus, or at your next event. Adam's keynotes and workshops on leading in today's landscape, becoming your best self, and lessons learned from America's top leaders leave audiences inspired and better equipped to excel personally and professionally. Visit adammendler.com to learn more and to bring Adam to your organization.
What were moments of self-doubt you had in your career, and how were you able to overcome them?
Well, every actor thinks they're never going to work again. I read a great interview with Henry Fonda, of all people.
Wow, a legend.
And he was convinced to the end that every movie he did was his last.
Wow.
By the way, anything we all do might be our last. You know, we could, you know, pull out in front of a semi tomorrow. So it's not really wrong. But, you know, the biggest impediment, I think, for people is fear. You know, people are more and more fear-based. You see it even in corporations, everything is made out of fear. You know, it's fear is the poison of every well. And the only escape from it is to have some sort of spirituality, some sort. And it can be whatever you want it to be. It doesn't have to be religion, but you have to believe there's something greater than you running the show. My experience tells me that there is. And once you can find a relationship with that and accept that, then you begin to be able to get a handle on fear. Because really that's the only way, because nothing is guaranteed to us, nothing. So the notion that you may go broke, you may get cancer, your wife may leave you. Oh, by the way, that could happen to any of us at any time. So what are we going to do about it? The answer is nothing. Can't do anything about it by definition. We can do is establish a relationship spiritually that gives us the knowledge and the comfort that all things being equal, the universe wants you to succeed, be happy, healthy, well, wise, and successful.
What are the biggest misconceptions people have about life as a Hollywood star?
The misconception? Just on a really practical, stupid, micro level, people have no idea how long it takes to make something and how the drudgery that is inherent in it and the horrendous hours. And look, it's great. I think it's one of the greatest jobs in the world. But, you know, I leave my house at 5:30 in the morning. And, you know, I come home sometimes at 8 or 9 at night. And I do that 5 days a week from July to the end of April, making network television series. You know, my friends who are in straight business, you know, they're home at 5 and watching football. And I'm, you know, covered in ash and soot and hanging from a third story balcony. You know what I mean? So there's that. And, you know, and I think that, you know, that there are plenty of kooks and crazy people in my business. 100% there are, but you know, it's a business and an art both. And there are true artists trying to make great things. And there are people minding the store and trying to run a responsible industry. And there are some, you know, there are adults out here, some of them. And, you know, really, it's really no different than any business in that capacity.
What's the biggest risk you've ever taken in your career?
I like to pride myself on being a risk taker, and I've done it many times. You know, a perfect recent example is when they asked me to be roasted on Comedy Central. And I was, you're going to get the crap beaten out of you. They're going to bring up every scandal, every nightmare that you've wanted to forget, that's 100 years old, and do it in front of your family and the world. And like my wife, Cheryl, was saying, you can't do it. You're going to look like a fool in front of the world. I said, honey, that shouldn't sail. But I know, again, it's showing, like, I don't care. I don't, like, I am who I am. This is who I am. Love it, leave it, whatever. This is me, warts and all. And it's going to be, I know it's going to be hilarious. And it was. And, you know, I love a good roast. I'm a good boy. I can take it. I think it's hilarious. And, you know, there's nothing better than seeing, you know, I remember watching John Kennedy's press conferences, and the press would roast him. This is in a totally different time in our culture, obviously.
Sure.
And he would roast them back. And I thought, he's a stud. Look at him. How good for him. And so I've always admired that. So I was happy to do it. But, you know, there are people that won't do it. I mean, I asked Gwyneth Paltrow to be on my dais, and she was like, oh, sure, honey, I'll do it. I said, Gwyneth, have you seen one of these roasts, though? You should look at them. She called me back and said, not only will I not be on the dais, I don't think you should do it at all. So, I mean, you know, I mean, it's a small thing, this roast, but I think it's emblematic of what you're talking about not having fear, taking a risk. And that happens all the time in this business. Actors fade out for the same reasons over and over. People say, why, you know, what is the key to a long career? And, you know, actors who don't make it, either, first of all, not good to begin with, and they get finally found out. That happens all the time. Or they get fearful and they get tight and they overthink, and that leads them to bad choices. Or it's drugs and alcohol. Those are the reasons. There are no other reasons.
How do you decide what brand deals to take? And what are some of the best marketing tips that you've learned from your career as a pitch man?
Well, the first big one I ever did was for DirecTV, and those commercials were amazing. I was very involved in the creative. They were among the most successful commercials of the last decade, not only for moving the needle for DirecTV, and I think their subscribership was up, I think, 30% during that reign, but creatively, they were hilarious. I got more feedback, positive feedback from that, than I mean it, from anything I've ever done.
I believe it. They were great commercials. No argument here. I love them.
They were so fun, but that's me going, okay, it's a commercial. I'm pitching. I get it. But that doesn't mean it has to not be good. Yeah, you know, commercials, great. When you see a great commercial, don't you love it?
Absolutely.
There's no reason for commercials to be bad. That's just laziness or, you know, bad thinking on people's part. So I was very involved in that, and it worked really well. You know, I'm currently working with Atkins. That's a different animal. We're not trying to be funny. We're not trying to be buzzy or move the zeitgeist. What we are trying to do is help people in their lives. And, you know, it's a natural fit for me. I've been living Atkins for, you know, 20 years on my own before they paid me, you know, the low carb lifestyle. And what's really satisfying is, you know, when I was doing DirecTV, people come up to me and go, I love your commercials. They're hilarious. That was great. Now, though, people come up to me and go, hey, man, I've lost 55 pounds in Atkins, low carb lifestyle. And that's great. So I think the key is, for when you're picking who to be in business with, is, you know, is it authentic to who you are? Is it a fit? And is the messaging, you know, going to seem, you know, either funny or entertaining or just, you know, really authentic? You know, you mentioned in the intro my entrepreneurial stuff, and, you know, for years, men have come up to me, and women too, and gone, do you have a secret? Like you look just like you did in St. Elmo's Fire, and that was 30 years ago. What's going on? And you know, that led me to create my own skincare line, because I've been diligent about taking care of myself, diligent about taking care of my skin. Men don't. And they don't know how to. They think it's femmy, or it's overwhelming when they go to Kiehl's, and then they go, there's 75,000 different things to buy, and they're like, forget it. And I got that. I understood it. So, you know, that's why I created Cobalt, and it's doing really, really well. But it's helping guys who want to better themselves, don't necessarily know how to do it, and I sell it online. And you know, it's, again, it's a good fit. It's like, oh, that makes sense. I should do that. I have the ability to reach people. It's something people come to me and ask me about anyway. Why not try and give them an answer?
Rob, you preempted my next question, which I'm just going to read what I wrote down. What are some of the best lessons you've learned since starting your business? And can listeners freeze the aging process the way that you and Paul Rudd have by using your products?
Well, you know, I'm blessed with good genetics. My dad, you know, is 80 and looks like he's 60. So there is that. But everybody can be a better iteration of themselves. And I've been taking care of my skin for 30 years, and now you're seeing the results. By the way, I didn't do it because I wanted to do it. I did it because I sat in a makeup chair and it was somebody's job to do it for me. But what I learned was everybody should be doing this and guys don't do it. So Cobalt is for them. It's really affordable. That's the other thing I learned is the first iteration of my company was called Profile, and it was sold in Nordstrom, and it was very high end, and it's great, and it's still wonderful. But I also realized I needed to reach out to the more average regular guys who might not have access to Nordstrom or aren't going to shop in a Nordstrom. And that's really what Cobalt is. And so you learn. You have to, again, you have to adjust. I think all good business people are flexible and can adjust to the markets and adjust to what people are responding to versus not responding to. And for me, that's been the biggest positive of going into this world. And also just having people go, dude, I love your under eye anti-aging roller.
Rob, what are the chances of a West Wing reboot? And what would it even look like given the way the political climate has changed since the show?
Well, I have the dubious distinction of being in two of the most requested shows ever to be rebooted. The West Wing and Parks and Recreation.
Sure.
And both shows are completely the brainchild of one singular human being. Mike Schur, for Parks and Recreation, and Aaron Sorkin, the West Wing. And there is no anything without them. And both those dudes have not, for the life of them, been able to figure out how and what a reboot would look like. Everybody's very aware that the audience demands it. It would be awesome. We would all, I'm sure, want to do it. But unfortunately, the two guys that it falls to figure it out so far haven't figured out a way in. You know, I you know, selfishly always like to take Aaron Sorkin at his word and remember the great episode where Bartlett came to Sam and said, Sam, you'll be president one day. You can do it. Don't be scared. You know, for me, that'd be a fun way to start.
That'd be great. I actually, side note, ran into Martin Sheen during the 2016 election in a parking lot right after lunch in Beverly Hills. And I was encouraging him to run for president, and he didn't. So I guess our listeners can make their own judgment as to whether we're better off with him as president or not. What are your thoughts on that?
Martin, there's nobody I love more than Martin or Bartlett. And they're kind of one and the same. I mean, and I really missed it. One year we all got golf carts to run around the lot on, and Martin would play Hail to the Chief on his golf cart whenever he pulled up, which always made me laugh. So I know the first thing Martin would do as president, he would reinstate them playing Hail to the Chief.
Maybe you can convince him to run this cycle.
Yeah, I'll do my best.
What can anyone do to develop a winning mindset?
Well, I think you're right. Well, just your question tells you everything you need to know. Winning is a mindset. Is. I'm naturally optimistic. I'm a glasses half full guy. I just am. I'm positive. I'm energetic. I mean, my character with Chris Traeger was not too far off the mark. And Sam Seaborn, same. Optimistic, go-getter, positive, never say die, walk through a wall. That's me. I've been that way since I was 8 years old. You don't get from, you know, Dayton, Ohio to where I am today without that driving you. And, you know, I've never looked at the odds against me. I think that this culture of victimhood is doing people disservices that they can't even imagine. You know, we live in the greatest country in the world. there is so much opportunity for everybody. The, you know, the people that are spewing this narrative that things are difficult and the system is rigged, there, like, there are 10 people for every version I can tell you, can show you, that have overcome all kinds of adversity to do, to go to great places. I even argue that coming from adversity today is the greatest calling card you can have. And, but it's all in your head, man. It's all in your head. It's all in how you look at it.
What is your definition of success?
To me, it's health, happy family, and having a job that supports my life, that gives me satisfaction and excitement.
Rob, thank you for joining us.
This is great. I really appreciate it. It was really fun. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you for listening to 30 Minute Mentors. If you enjoyed the podcast, spread the word and feel free to tag Adam at Adam Mendler. You can also head to adammendler.com for more episodes and to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. And don't forget to join us next week for another episode with another one of our 30 Minute Mentors.